Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Okay, hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And today we are joined by... Now, let me check your name.
Steen.
Great. And today we are joined by Peggy Orenstein. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
She's flown all the way from New York just for us.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
And boy, are my arms tired.
No, you're in the UK, aren't you, to do, you know, various things.
Do stuff.
Because you've written a book, Peggy.
I have.
What's your book?
Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape.
Ooh. I like. And it's a New York Times bestseller.
Number 4.
Wow.
Yeah, I got way up there.
We don't have any old person on this podcast. We only
That's
have
right.
people of quality such as yourself. So thank you for
Well, numbers 1 to 3 said no. No, I'm joking. Right. I'm just kidding, of course. Of course, because Peggy, you're a massive deal. Not only have you written a book, you've written numerous books. As you said, you're a writer for the New York Times. You've written for the LA Times, Vogue, Elle, Time. A lot of publications with the word Time in the title. Yeah. But most exciting for me, the Oprah magazine. Peggy, did you get to meet Oprah?
Oh, no, she doesn't. She's not there at the magazine.
She doesn't
what?
Do that. I thought she was doing the desktop publishing, you know.
No,
I thought she was cutting and pasting just in the font size.
Sorry.
Oh, you've ruined it. No.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
But your name...
Yes, I met her. She's my best friend, and I go to her house for dinner every night.
Oh, great.
Does that make you feel better?
Yeah.
Because if we do the reverse racism, every time someone finds out I'm Australian, like, oh, do you know Kylie? Do you know Nicole Kidman?
I don't
Kidman?
Even know who that is, Kylie.
Get out.
Welcome, Peggy. Welcome to the podcast. Now, before
Thank
we get
you.
Into the book chat, please tell us about your family.
Oh, what do you want to know about them?
What's the...
I have no idea.
What are the constituent parts?
What are the constituent parts? I have a husband who is a documentary filmmaker, and I have a 13-year-old daughter.
Okay. So you're just entering the teen years with the...
Yes.
Long pause. I wish, listener, you could see Peggy's face. It's hissy is the only way I can describe it. So has having a daughter and having a daughter who's going into teenagerness, is that what inspired you to write this book, Girls and Sex?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the book that I wrote, my book before this was called Cinderella Ate My Daughter, and it was looking at how the that kind of pink and pretty and sparkly girly girl princess industrial complex culture was teaching girls that how they looked was more important than who they were.
Mm.
And it was sort of the process of sexualization, of imposing this, you know, that onto girls. And so it seemed kind of natural coming out of that to be curious about sexuality. And then on top of that, you know, she was getting to be a little older, and my friends with older kids were telling me about, you know, sexting and binge drinking and hookup culture and I don't know about you.
And also
you know,
their kids are up to all sorts.
Right, and what? Who knows what their kids are up to. No, but, you know, my reaction as a parent was to kind of want to plug my ears and go, don't tell me, because I feel that parenting from ignorance and fear is usually the best strategy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I'm the daughter of a vicar and a vicar's wife, and they just prayed that I'd be a virgin, basically.
And that
worked really well.
I know.
Yeah,
all five of us are big whore bags, so, you know.
Well, there you go.
I hope Richard Dawkins is listening to this, because it's just going to reinforce that belief system right away.
But anyway, so that was part of it. And then the other piece of it for me was that this conversation about sexual assault and consent had kind of bursting onto the scene. And, you know, it's such an important conversation. So important, you know, consent and understanding the ground rules. So important. At the same time, kind of a low bar for a sexual experience. You know, I was not raped. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to really know what was happening, what the quality of the experience was, what the attitudes were, what the expectations were for girls after Yes, and what kind of, you know, guidance and support they needed from us.
So how did you sort of embark on the research? How did you, I guess, know who to talk to?
Well, first I lay on the ground and cried for a while because it just seemed way overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to girls. I talked to 70 about in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And they were from a kind of broad ethnic spectrum, but they were all either college bound or in college. Mm-hmm. And I chose that group because I wanted to talk to the girls that we think of as having opportunities. And I wanted to talk to girls that we thought of as being, you know, the primary beneficiaries of feminism, because I thought if even those girls who were, you know, so bright, so ambitious, so privileged educationally, leaning in, right, all over the place, if even they were toppling in their personal lives, then we couldn't deny that there was a problem. Sometimes it was really random. There's a girl in there that... there's a chapter about virginity, and there's a girl that kind of frames that chapter who grew up in a town that that's known for being the evangelical Vatican, it's called in the United mm-hmm. States, and where, you know, abstinence until marriage is just, everybody says that. And I found her because she emailed me randomly because she had read some article that I had written, and she wanted to meet me. To talk about the article. Normally I would kind of say, no, I'm too busy for that, but I thought, who knows, maybe she'll be interesting.
That's why I emailed Oprah the other day. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I said to Oprah said, I always take those opportunities. She said, thanks, Peg.
Did she say that's a light bulb moment for me? Did she say it in that accent as well? Is that exactly like how Oprah said it?
Yes.
Yeah. So you met up, presumably, with this girl. And,
yes,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? So I met her, and we were talking about the work, and I just slipped in that I was doing this book, and she said, oh, well, maybe you'd be interested in my story, because she had gone from growing up in this, you know, really hermetic culture where she was told, you know, she would go to hell if she, you know, kissed a boy, to coming to an extremely liberal state college. And it was just really very admirable and sort of testing out her environment. And I use that as a frame to talk about virginity and to question the notion of virginity as being first intercourse, because that was one thing I really wanted to do with this book was, you know, we define sex so narrowly as being intercourse. And the truth is that kids aren't having more intercourse, and they're not having it at younger ages, but they are doing other things more. Mm. And when we don't include those in our definition of sex, it opens the door to disrespect and to risk and to this kind of silence that disadvantages girls.
Mm. And is it true the thing that a lot of kids, they're not having vaginal sex because that's considered sex, but they're having anal sex because that's considered you're still a virgin if you've just done it up the bum?
Yes. And, I mean, I would say that the definitely rates of anal sex have risen. I think not just because of that, but I think because of its prevalence in porn.
Mm.
And there was a British study, actually, that showed, that was looking at high school kids 16 to 18, which is very, very young.
Mm.
And it found that generally it was boys who were pushing for anal sex. And they were doing
Shocker.
It. Yeah, right. What a surprise. But they were doing it not as a way to share intimacy, but as a competition with other boys, and that they thought that girls would have to be and could be coerced into it.
Mm.
And both the girls said that it was painful.
Mm.
Again, shocker, right? Mm. But what was interesting was that both the boys and the girls blamed that on the girls, saying that they were naive or flawed or inexperienced and couldn't relax. So I thought that was really interesting. But but even so, it's still relatively uncommon, anal sex. What is super common is oral sex. That's been the biggest change in the 20th century, was that oral sex became less intimate than vaginal sex, if it goes female to male.
Reading a book, that was what I was quite blown away with, I think, is that, is that, you know, in one of the book, part of the book you say, girls were using it to say goodnight, because they knew that's what the boys...
Well, that was what somebody in a newspaper said. I didn't say that. But what was true was that what girls would say to me over and over, like they'd all read the same instruction manual, was, it's no big deal. When they were talking about female to male oral sex, and it was and they would do it for a lot of reasons. They would say, you know, it's a way to show that you like somebody. It was a way to gain popularity. It was a way to go further without having intercourse. They were worried that if they had intercourse, they would, you know, that what kids would say is catch feelings, like it was, you know, gonorrhea or something.
Oh my God!
They would say it was impersonal, which I would be like, I don't know, a penis in my mouth, kind of personal.
Yeah.
But sometimes they would use it because they were feeling that they were in a dicey situation and they could get out of having intercourse by giving head, basically.
Mm.
But I heard so many stories of girls giving one side. It was one of the things that really I had to adjust to when I was, you know, when I first started hearing that, I would betray shock, and that was not a good thing as a journalist. But I would hear so many stories about it that I started saying to girls, you know, what if every time you were with a guy, he told you to get him a glass of water from the kitchen, and he never got you a glass of water? Or if he did, it was like, you want me to, like really begrudging. You wouldn't stand for it. You know, like I said, these were girls who were very, you know, gung-ho feminist girls, and they would laugh when I said that, and they'd say, well, when you put it that way, you know, and I'd be like, well, why wouldn't you put it that way? Why would you think that performing a sex act is less insulting than being told to go get somebody a glass of water from the kitchen without reciprocity?
Because I suppose the other side of the argument might be, isn't it a good thing that women and girls are more sexually confident and they're exploring their bodies and sexuality?
But they're not.
Right.
I don't think giving somebody a blowjob is exploring your body.
They're exploring someone else's body,
yeah. Right? And that's what it comes down to. It was that they felt like they could engage sexually, but they didn't feel like they could enjoy it.
And I find it kind of strange. I mean, as a woman in late 30s, I sort of feel like I have more opportunities. I think the world's getting better. But then when I was reading your book, I was
You're shagging loads of people, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Orgasms are plenty.
Yeah. And I just thought, gosh, it is just so, you know, if we had to watch porn as kids, you would have to go to the video store or get an older person to go and get you a VHS copy, rewind it, you know, like, and it wasn't so accessible. And also the fact that there are all these girls from 11 or whatever shaving their vagina or waxing their vagina.
You just like combined like three things.
I know. Sorry. Okay,
let's rewind a second.
Sorry, there are all these things.
That's all right.
We'll unpack all that. Thank you, Peggy. You're much more of a professional than I am. I'm just ranting. I'm ranting.
I know, but I would get like that. I totally get it. People ask me all the time, you know, how did we get from where we were in, you know, whatever, the late early 70s or whatever it was, to here? I don't really have an answer to that, except I think it was a combination of when we stopped saying don't, we didn't replace it with anything, like an ethical framework. Mm-hmm. We just stopped talking about it. We got a super sexualized media. We had the AIDS crisis that, you know, told a whole generation that sex was death and traumatized everybody, so that stopped talking about it. We had a lot of right-wing government and, you know, all that. So,
there's no more right-wing people in politics anymore.
No.
Few.
I know. God knows we don't have them in the United States. Oh. Not a one.
You guys are so liberal.
You hear a lot that internet porn is blamed a lot. I mean, do you think that is a big...
I think that the internet has been a game changer. And you were talking... I mean, I'm before VHS, so when I was a kid, you had to actually get a magazine. Things didn't move. And with every iteration of porn, it's become more explicit and more violent. That accessibility has really changed things, and it is seeping into kids' sexual scripts. So we talked about anal sex being one thing. I mean, on another more sort of G-rated level, girls would say to me all the time, my boyfriend wants to know why I don't make those noises that women make in porn when we have sex. I know. We're on a podcast, so you can't see the face that was just made.
Yeah, and there's also no saxophone playing in the background. It doesn't make it less hot. Yeah.
That's what I said. So, and the dishwasher's not even broken.
I know. So I would just like, I would, yeah, you know, so yeah. I had to be careful not to make faces like you just made, sorry. Right? And no, it's fine, but you know, I mean, you can see, right? Like, yeah. I'd have to go, And, but I did feel after hearing that multiple times that I had to respond, and I said, you know, it's a movie, and in a movie, there has to be a soundtrack. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a silent movie.
Yeah.
So they have to make those noises so that there's like a sound, because there's no dialogue. You know, they go, oh, you know, and so there was just like ways, and but so that's really concerning. So it does, it is influencing kids' sexual scripts, and it's another area where women's sexuality is a performance for male pleasure, right? And where often, you know, it's humiliating, often it's degrading. Women are always ready. They are multi-orgasmic, like, you know, right away. They just want to have intercourse, you know, whatever. It's an unreal... But here's the thing, though. It's not just porn, I think, because the aesthetic of porn has so seeped into the overarching aesthetic of pop culture that it's hard to tell the difference sometimes now.
Yeah.
And that... Even something really benign, like one night my daughter and I were watching the movie Brooklyn. Did you see Brooklyn? It's a totally good movie. Totally fine. Great movie. Go see it. But it has a very typical sex scene, which is they like kiss for 3 seconds, they rip off their clothes, they jump into bed, they apparently have intercourse, and then it's over and everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. Right? And it suddenly struck me that she's going to see more of those scenes than she is... porn, probably.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, honey, you know how, like, when somebody takes a cab ride in a movie, they show them getting into the cab, and then they show them getting out of the cab, but they don't show the whole ride in between.
Yeah.
Because that would take up the whole movie. Sex is similar.
I remember Top Gun was my favourite film for a long time, it being the best film of all time. I think we can all agree on that. So, growing up, I thought sex was like, you'd like go into a dimly lit room, bit of wafty white curtains, bit of take my breath away.
Wear a bomber jacket.
Tom Cruise leaves you a nice post-it. I thought that's what it was, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know a lot of things before I read your book. Like Bukkake and ass to mouth. That sounds lovely.
Mm.
Ass to mouth. So thanks for the education.
DVDA, do you know what that is?
No.
Don't want to know, mate. You don't want to know.
Oh, yes, I do. It's about two dicks in two holes.
Yeah, that's a big... Yeah. In one hole.
Oh.
It was actually the intermediary platform between DVD and Blu-ray, but good guess.
Thank you, Billy. But yeah, that's... I mean, in a nutshell, I just sort of found that, like, girls have to be bald... They have to look perfect. They have to wear short skirts. They have to have great tits. And all boys have to do is unzip their trousers. Like, that is it. Like, you know, and it is all on us. And none about our pleasure. None about, you know, us getting amazing cunnilingus, you know, and being sex ready all the time.
Right. And the thing is, though, that girls, it wasn't just that boys weren't willing. Girls didn't want it. Mm-hmm. Girls did not want boys going down on them because they had learned. I mean, girls would talk all the time about, you know, if they fit the right mold, you know, I'm proud of my body, I want to show it off. But then, you know, the confidence came off with the clothes. So they didn't want, they would talk about their genitals like they were simultaneously sacred and icky. And the whole business of shaving all their, or waxing, whatever they were doing to get rid of all their pubic hair, it kind of reminded me of the 20s. Which was when flapper fashions came in and women first started shaving their armpits and legs, which I think people probably also found creepy at the time, you know, and infantilizing. But it happened because it was the first time that women's limbs were publicly visible. And so suddenly they were open to scrutiny and judgment. And I think that there's a way that the pubic hair removal, which girls always would say, I do for myself, as if... You know, like if you were on a desert island with a razor, that's how you'd spend your time.
I love putting lava hot wax on my vag.
It's so fun.
Yeah. But it's not just about porn either. I think you say this in the book. It's also about Christianity and the abstinence movement. And how's that playing in?
Well, you know, that's been an utter disaster in the United States. Abstinence-only education, on which we've spent, I believe, $170 billion.
Could have just given everyone a video of Top Gun for that, really.
Right? Or, you know...
With that highway to the danger zone. Anal sex.
Playing with the boys. I mean, the whole soundtrack. Oh, sexy.
I really know the whole thing. I just know the...
Take my breasts away. You look a bit like the lady from that
Kelly
film.
McGillis.
Kelly McGillis.
Yeah. That's so nice.
Are you flirting with that?
I don't know Oprah, but I do know Kelly McGillis's ex-boyfriend.
Oh! Oh, so Tom Cruise. You know Tom Cruise. No, well, oh, my God, she knows Tom Cruise. You know, I'm Oprah.
It was another guy in the movie. She was good at dating a different guy
was
in that
she?
Movie.
Was it Goose?
Yeah, I don't know what his name was in the movie. His name's Barry Tubb.
I love how this is turning into a Top Gun podcast. So I do apologize.
Yeah, because you're hosting it.
Because it's about sex. And that's what, wait, you just asked me something.
Sorry, you did ask me about something. Abstinence.
Oh, abstinence.
Yeah, yeah. We've got
to I'd rather talk about Top Gun. So, yeah. Yes, it was a total waste of time, total waste of money. It did not have any. In states that still have abstinence only education, you have far higher rates of disease and pregnancy. But what I did as part of the book, too, was I went to a purity ball. I don't know if you've been to a purity ball.
No, but it sounds like my cup of tea.
Yeah. It was the girls all wear white gowns and the fathers wear tuxedos. It was like a wedding.
We have a thing in Australia called the debutante ball.
That's the same thing as a cotillion.
Yeah, so when I was 16, I dressed up as a bride.
Yeah.
Was presented by the Catholic vicar to the community.
Yeah, just like that.
Yeah.
Like a human sacrifice,
pretty much.
Yeah.
And then everyone clapped us and celebrated.
And then you danced.
Yeah. Right? And then I'd like dry hump my boyfriend.
No, you're not supposed to do that.
No, I wasn't. But it was lovely.
But anyway, in a purity ball, you're certainly not supposed to. No, so in a purity ball, they take vows to remain abstinent until they enter into a biblical marriage. I'm not sure what's biblical about it. And the fathers vow to cover and guide their daughters. And it was weird, for sure. I mean, it certainly wouldn't be what I would do. But the one thing that did strike me, and it was interesting because there was a German television crew there too, and I got into a conversation with the German TV person about it, who was also a woman, and she said, "Is it weird that I'm kind of moved by this?" And I said, "You know, I am too." And I thought about it, and I thought it was the only time in all of my reporting, all my travels, I didn't like what they were saying. But it was fathers who were affirming their daughters and talking to them about their expectations and ideas around sex. And in the world that I came from, the secular world, when I asked girls what their fathers had talked to them about, they would just laugh and say nothing, or they'd say, oh, they just make lame jokes. So there was this expression of love for their daughters at that moment of transition to womanhood that was really beautiful, even though the content of that expression was highly objectionable and counterproductive, because we know that those kids don't, in fact, abstain.
No, they go and dry hunt their boyfriend. Exactly.
Well, they maybe become sexually active a very short time after other kids, but they get pregnant at higher rates and they have higher rates of disease because they're in a kind of denial, I think.
So they hold off a bit longer, but then they go right at it and they're off. And that's it.
Yeah. And also there's that pressure to get into marriage, which is not...
Right.
Which we all know is not a good thing.
It's dreadful.
The other really is dreadful. Ends in misery.
Yeah. The other thing is that girls from the community... The biggest predictor of a community having a high divorce rate in the United States is a high percentage of evangelical Christians.
Yeah.
And I think that has to do with that, you get married in order to have sex, which is not the right reason to get married.
I know quite a lot of people who get married so they can stop having sex.
That works too.
Yeah, it's a good trick.
Yeah.
How many children you have? You had it that many times.
Yes, that's right. Got two children. One of them was a turkey baster.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So in a nutshell, things are quite bleak, aren't they?
Well, you know, yes and no. I think one thing, and one of the things that's been really amazing was I just had no... I mean, it sounds self-serving to say I didn't know how big this book was going to be, but it has gone so beyond my expectations, and the audience in the U.S. has been so hungry to have this conversation. It's been incredible. You know, the consent conversation that really girls began and girls have been engaging in online is starting to move over to, okay, we have consent, now what? Mm. So I really see a cultural shift happening, and I believe in the... It reminds me of, you know, like the food movement. You know, like, I mean, I'm from California, so everything reminds me of the food movement. But you know, if I had said to you 20 years ago, hey, what do you think about free-range chickens? You'd just look at me like I was mad, right? Mm. You know, what's a free-range chicken?
Mm. But I'm from Southeast London, so I'd still do that, to be honest.
So not everybody, but you know, I mean, now...
What's wrong with KFC?
The whole, you know, you can't throw a rock without hitting something organic or sustainable or whatever, and that really did. So I really believe in the possibility of the conversation to make things better, and I also, you know, talk about cultures at the end of the book that are better, which we can talk.
So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned there. So is there a different culture for lesbians and for girls growing up, going out with other girls?
No, not at all.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was genuinely surprised.
I've never, in the 3 years I've been doing this podcast, no one's done that to Ellie Gibson before.
Fuck. Lesbians be nicer.
I just teach me
to be heteronormative.
I have to keep myself amused. That was really interesting. One of the things that girls in same sex couplings taught me was, first of all, the orgasm gap disappears. So young women tend to be more than young men. They measure their own pleasure by their partner's satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So they say, if they're straight, they'll say, if he had a good time, then I had a good time. Whereas boys are more likely than girls to measure their satisfaction by their satisfaction. Mm. So like, if I came, I had a good time. You know? Yeah. So that holds true, though, when girls are partnered with girls. They're invested in the other person's pleasure. They all, again, would say the same thing, to get off the script and to make a encounter that felt good to them. And the other piece was that gay girls really challenged the idea of virginity as defined by heterosexual intercourse. And again, not because intercourse isn't a big deal, of course it's a big deal, but it's not the only big deal. And so I asked one of the girls that I met how she knew she wasn't a virgin anymore, because she'd never had heterosexual sex. And she said, yeah, you know, I wondered about that too. And so I Googled it. Google didn't know. And it failed her. And so she said she decided she wasn't a virgin anymore when she'd had her first orgasm with a partner. And I just thought, like, wow. Mm. You know, what if that, just for a second, we thought that was the definition? It would totally shift how we understand sexuality, and it makes it into something that's more about a pool of experiences that involve sensuality and arousal and affection and warmth and touch and all these things, as opposed to this race to a goal. And one thing that I talk about when I do talk to young people is, say, just think about it for a second. Who's really more experienced? The person who, oh, I get to use a British word, the person who has snogged a partner for the last 3 hours and experimented with communication and sensuality and give and take, or the person who got, you know, wasted at a party and hooked up with a random to get rid of their virginity before they went to college.
And I found that weird. I remember having, I've used to sort of think, I had an argument with two friends about 10 years ago. One was a woman, one was a man. They said that for them, sex was much less, I'm talking about vaginal penetrative sex, but that was much less intimate for them than snogging. But sex, that's just nothing, that's just forever. And I was like, really? Because I feel the completely opposite. Like, the penis is I'm not going to say better than a tongue, but it's more penisy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it. Do you agree with me, Helen?
Absolutely correct. A penis is more penisy, Ellie. No.
That's the classic thing that they say about sex workers, right? That they'll
kiss on the mouth.
They won't kiss on the mouth.
I've seen Pretty Woman. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. We're just doing all the films today. We're just doing all the hits.
Pretty Woman.
Yeah, that's it.
We're going to end with Steel Magnolias and cry. But yeah, no, I think that's true. And just that, you know, kissing, and you can feel a sense of closeness. But yeah, I guess if you're fucking, you could be detached, but you can't because you are attached.
We're attached.
You know, I got an email recently from, I get a lot of emails from girls, but one of the girls thought I should have included demisexuality.
Is that what you just fancy Demi Moore?
Yeah.
Again.
What can we sing?
Ghost.
In
90s movie.
A demisexual is somebody who is only interested in sex if they are romantically attracted to somebody, if they like the person. They only want to have sex with people that they like.
Wow. I thought that was...
I know. I'm a demisexual. I've got a label. Put that on Instagram.
I know. But I thought that was...
I might be white and middle class, but I'm a demisexual.
I know, you got a thing.
I'm going to go on a rally.
But I mean, I don't mean to laugh at her, but I did kind of look and go, I would have called that sex. That's it. And girls would say to me a lot, like it was a flaw in them that they couldn't have emotionless sex. And that, you know, that really was an issue.
Mm. Well, look, let's have some practical chat, I think. Because we've talked about the problems and some of the stuff's going on. Very concerned about having two boys and how do I teach them how to be respectful of women and how to basically not do all the things you've just talked about. Like, what's the way? When do you start with that?
Well, I'm just going to start writing a boy book, so if you just hang on.
Oh, thank God. Can you hurry up?
For a few years. It'll be right about when your kids are that age.
Brilliant.
So I'll just have that for you.
Thanks, Peggy.
Thank you, Peggy. If you could dedicate it to Charlie and Joe, that'd be lovely.
That's I don't have sons, so I'd be happy to.
Write that down, Ellie.
You know, I mean, ideally, I think you start from the get-go. Ideally, you start by... one of the things that I talk about in the book is this idea of the psychological clitoridectomy that we give girls. And that we tend to, when we have children, we'll tend to name all of boys' body parts. So you'll at least say, you know, here's your willy, something like that. And with girls, you go right from navel to knees, and we leave that whole middle part unnamed, which makes it unspeakable. And then in puberty classes, they see that thing that looks like a steer's head, and it grays out between the legs, and you never say vulva, and you never say clitoris, and you know, fewer than half of girls masturbate, and then, you know, then they go into a partnered encounter, and we somehow expect it's going to be they'll be able to express their wants and needs, and it's really not realistic. So I think you do have to start from the get-go naming it.
So the proper name. So
the
not
proper name.
You go for penis, vulva.
Vulva, clitoris, you know.
All the hits.
You know how preschoolers are always masturbating. You know, you say, you know, it feels really good when you rub your vulva, but we don't do it at the Christmas table in front of grandma. That's something that we do, you know, privately.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like encouraging understanding. And just, you know, I'll tell you, for me, I think my daughter was like 11 then maybe. I said, hey, Daisy, do you know what my book's about? And she said no, not that she cares, but no. And I said, well, it's about girls and sex. And she said, oh, that seems like a good idea. And I said, you think so? And she said, yeah, I think that's a really good idea. And I said, did you know that a lot of girls are never told what where their clitoris is and what it's for? And she just went, Mom, can we stop talking about your book now? But, you know, what we did with the most popular puberty book in the U.S., does have the external genitalia, has labia, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't label the clitoris. Just ignores its existence.
Wow.
Just not there. And I thought, why?
It's like, why? It is like metaphorical female genital mutilation.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll be fine on Woman's Hour tomorrow, by the way. They love talking about that.
We always talk about girls having female role models and reading books about girls. Boys need to, too. And you need to kind of challenge the things that they're watching. Not say, you know, you shouldn't watch that, but... I mean, you know, on the girl side, when my daughter was little, I used to say, gee, you know, Cinderella's really neat, but have you even noticed that her eyes are bigger than her wrist? Because my eyes aren't bigger than my wrist. Are yours? And, you know, why do you think they make her eyes bigger than her wrist? Why do you think they make her eyes bigger than her waist? You know, or just sort of bringing up some of these ideas so that you teach your kids to be critical consumers. You've got to talk to your sons about porn, and you've got to do it before they're 12 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Because so how do you start that conversation?
If your kids' friends have iPhones,
right,
all one of them has to do is go, hey, look at this. Boom, porn. But I think you just have to start talking about them. You know, you have to say, has anybody shown you pornography? Do you know what pornography is? It's really...
Oh, Mom, shut up!
It's just role playing.
It's really, yeah, it's too bad, too bad. You know, yeah. You need to hear this. It's really normal to be curious about sex. I totally understand that. But the things that people might show you or that you might look up online are not real. Just like, you know, the violence in the movies that you see is not real. What's more is they're trying to get a really big response from you, so they keep getting more and more. Just like, you know, in movies, the violence gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. It gets bigger and bigger, and it affects your... what you're attracted to and how you respond to things, and you know, help them understand the commercial aspects, the profit making aspects of porn, and how that affects arousal, response, ability to connect, all of that. And nobody's talking to them about it. We've just not. And I really feel like parents need to go to a site like Pornhub. I don't mean to advertise porn.
No, because that's what I'm gonna, yeah.
You have to actually go look, because otherwise you might be thinking about, like, you know, the Playboys you saw when you were a kid or the VHS you saw when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And it's not the same, and you need to see what your children can see.
You can't ignore it
No,
anymore.
You can't. And as I've been talking to boys, too, they tell me, I mean, it's not just like anything you can imagine. It's all the things that you never wanted to imagine that you can get out there. And they start watching it, and they have to put on this pose. Now I'm getting to my boy book stuff, but boys use the word hilarious a lot, and I think they use it as a distancing mechanism. Like, you show them something really dehumanizing and disgusting that's, you know, on a porn site, and they go, that's hilarious. And I think, that is not...
No.
That is not the normal response, and I think that they use
and that's
that.
Not even what that's designed to elicit.
I don't even think it's their response. I think that they learn that as boys they have to not feel.
And also the whole area of sexting and WhatsApp and all those sort of, I think you say in the book about girls being pressured to send photos of their boobs, and then boys threatening girls saying, if you don't send it to me, I'll do something bad or kill myself.
And
or
that's
something.
Actually, that comes from British research too.
Oh, right.
There was British research that they found that actually equal percentages of boys and girls in high school and middle school sexed voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's not voluntary, it's way disproportionate that girls are pressured into it. They reported being more distressed by being coerced into sexting than coerced into actual sexual acts.
Mm. So basically, talk to your kids about sex early and often.
Early and often. And
call the penis the penis.
You can call the penis
what
the penis.
What if, like, my 5-year-old, you call it the penis, but he just runs around the house going, peanuts! Look at my peanuts!
I know, my daughter used to, when she was 3, she one day was running down the main street of Berkeley going, vagina, 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 vagina. I'm doing it. But, you know, the other thing that I looked at that I just wanted to throw out there was comparing with the Dutch. It's always like the Dutch are the...
Love the Dutch. Right? Oh, they've got everything
so
sorted.
Good.
Relaxed.
Plus they have good Indonesian food.
Yeah. Pancakes.
I know. But anyway, they went a really different way after the sexual revolution, and they really tried to work with kids and educate kids around sexuality. So there was a study that I looked at that was comparing 300 randomly chosen girls from American and Dutch, similar demographic girls from American and Dutch universities, talking about their early sexual experience. And the Dutch embodied everything we say we want. You know, fewer pregnancies, less disease, less drunkenness, more positive consequences, like knowing your partner really well, being able to, you know, tell your partner what you want and what you don't want. And
having a pancake afterwards.
Having a pancake.
All of that. Yes.
Getting some Indonesian food.
wearing wooden shoes.
Exactly. And what they said was that their parents, teachers, and doctors talked to them from an early age about sex, sexual pleasure, and the importance of mutual trust. And they said particularly parents. American parents were not so much less comfortable talking about sex. They talked to their kids, but they only talked about risk and danger. The Dutch parents talked about balancing responsibility and joy. And as a parent myself, I think I would have thought I was being really progressive if I talked to my daughter about contraception, about disease prevention, and about consent, because I'm, you know, truly modern. But, and I would have thought, oh, you know, well done, Peggy. You know, now I know that that's not enough. It's really not enough.
So in a nutshell, we're all moving to the Netherlands. That's what we're saying.
We're all buying
wooden
shoes.
That's the only way.
That's right.
Go to the Netherlands.
Eat Gouda.
Carve out a clog.
Yeah.
Off. Done.
Great.
Nutshells.
Right. Sold everything.
We didn't have to talk for all that time.
Yes. Done.
Girls in tech, right. Move to the Netherlands.
Okay.
And give head to women.
Yeah. That is a great tip. Now, we always like to round off the podcast, Peggy, with Scummy Mummy Confessions.
Do you want me to kick
off?
Yeah,
if you've got one, go for it.
So the other day, I bought a new bra, and I was writing an article about boobs and how they change. So I went to a bra shop and I said, can you take a photo of before and after? Anyway, I was walking down the street looking at a photo of myself with my new bra on. And then I thought, oh, I must go and pay for the coffee at the coffee shop. So I go in and I put my money down. I put my phone down.
Amazing.
So dumb. I said, I just need to pay for the coffee. But what I did was I showed them a picture of me. I think you'll find this will pay for the latte.
Yeah.
Yeah. £2, sir.
Peggy, do you have a Scummy Mummy confession you'd like to share?
You know, I was just talking about this one. I really blew it over Barbie. You know, I had the whole, I don't know if you had the should I Barbie or should I not Barbie.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were in Target, which has like, the, you know, the giant gleaming toy aisle, and I had gone off to find something, and my husband and daughter, and he gave her this crap Fairytopia Barbie, and she walks out and is like, why would you give her that? We don't, you know, I don't want her to have that. And I took it, and then she started to cry, and then I started to like give it back to her. We'll get you a nice Barbie, honey, not this crappy, you know. She was crying, so then I gave it to her, and then I started to cry, and then in the end I gave her the dumb
we'll
Barbie.
We'll get you a feminist Barbie. Yeah. She comes with a little bonfire and a bra.
Sorry, I got her a Katniss Everdeen Barbie.
Oh,
you know,
amazing.
And,
yeah.
But it was just like I was just sitting there crying. I'm just constantly, I live my life in a series of contradictions with my daughter. It's amazing that she functions.
Well, thank you, Peggy. Thank you for that very honest confession.
Yes.
Loved it. Yeah, I think that's about it, Helen.
It is. Thank you so much. Now, buy Peggy's brilliant
book.
Oh, yeah. That's why we're here.
Brilliant. And Catelyn Moran has recommended it, the UK legend. Have you met Catelyn?
Yes.
She's great, isn't she?
She is great.
I pretend like I know her. I just...
Well, Catelyn and Oprah and I were... Wait, I have a question.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're having dinner at Kelly McGillis's house.
We're having dinner with Kelly McGillis and her ex-boyfriend. My friends on Facebook, I put the British cover up, and they felt it was super sexual. Do you see it that way? That they said, they thought that, they were like, whoa, that ampersand is hot.
I don't see any.
They were like, that is like the sluttiest ampersand. I don't know what it
is. I'm more of an exclamation mark girl myself.
Yeah. So like, when you get the book, all of you who are listening, get the book, look at the ampersand, and tweet me and tell me if you think it looks hot or not.
Or have a wank, depending on how you feel about it. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Do follow us on the social media at Scummy Mummies.
That's right. And also subscribe to the podcast. Give us a review, preferably 5 stars.
Yep.
And we'll be doing lots more live shows across the UK. So look at our live shows tab on our website.
ScummyMummies.com. Well, that's about it. Thank you so much, Peggy. Thank you for being a great guest.
This was the most fun. Thank you.
Aww, thank you. In your face, woman's hour.
Yeah. Leave that with you. She hasn't done woman's hour yet. To be fair. Oh, amazing.
We love woman's hour.
We do,
yes,
a lot.
We do. Please have us on again.
Thanks, Jane.
All right. Until next time.
Bye-bye. I have never been so humiliated in my life, so it was really good.
Can you stop laughing, please?
Oh, we're still recording. We're still recording.
That was Kate.
We've just been podcast bombed by Peggy's publisher. Anyway, thanks, Kate.
I think she just thought because we were laughing.
Kate, do you like anal? Kate, do you like anal? Do you? You come in now. You want to be on the podcast? Be on the podcast. Come on. Come and sit down. Oh, she's gone. What a shocker. Anyway... Back to the chat.
It's just like Oprah.
Yes, it is.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.